It's Tuesday, the 27th of July. This is Richard Carabine from Jazz London Radio's Rock and Blues Show. I'm really excited to have the opportunity to talk to Jerry McAvoy, bass player with Rory Gallagher, Nine Below Zero, and Band of Friends. This interview is to mark the 50th anniversary of Rory's debut solo album entitled Rory Gallagher. There's a limited edition box set coming out on September the 3rd to mark this special occasion. The album features some of Rory's greatest songs, such as Laundromat, Sinner Boy, Hands Up, and Just a Smile. Well, hello, Jerry. Thanks very much for giving up your time to come and talk to us.
That's my pleasure, Richard. Thanks for having me.
If I could start with just asking, when did you first meet up with Rory and join the band?
Well, that takes me back to Belfast around about 1967. Oh, my God, did I say that? yeah, because Rory had his band Taste, which was Taste Mark One. They decided to go to Belfast because there was a thriving blues scene in Belfast, and Rory obviously his interest in blues, I mean, it dragged him there. So they were playing around the clubs in Belfast, and Rory was becoming sort of a personality walking around town because he looked great. Now he looked sort of different, you know, with the hair and stuff like. There was a music store in Belfast called Crimble's, where people like myself, I mean, young, teenage, budding musicians would go in and if you were allowed to, maybe try out one of the guitars or, you know, because I had a fantastic array of guitars, Gibsons, Gretches, Fenders was fantastic. And this would have been a Saturday morning, most Saturday mornings. And I was there one Saturday morning, and as I walked in, I saw Rory sitting in the window trying out an acoustic guitar. I mean, I was a fan. Don't forget. So I sort of plucked up the courage and I went over and said hello to him. And he was very gracious. And he said, sit down. And we talked for about 5 minutes, you know, 10 minutes. And that's the first time I actually met him. But I met him as a fan. And I just asked him what sort of advice he would give to, an up and coming, whatever, musician, if possible. And he said, just practice. Practice, listen to as much as you can and try and play with as many people as you can. And that advice sort of stuck by me. But that was the first meeting with Rory.
Oh, wow. And I think you were 18 and he was 3 years older than you. Is that right?
When I joined Rory, I was 19.
Oh, 19.
Rory would have been 22 when I joined.
And was Wilger the drummer, Wilger Campbell, was he around the same age as well? You're all young.
He was slightly older than Rory.
Oh, right. Okay.
He was senior citizen.
He's a senior citizen, yeah.
I think he was 24.
Oh, wow. What are your memories of making the album?
Well, to start with, I mean, the band I had in Belfast, Deep Joy, we moved to London because that's the move you had to make in those days. I mean, because in Belfast or in Ireland, you had to play top 20 stuff, and we were sort of branching out and trying to write songs. And so we made the move to London, and perchance we ended up with the Robert Stigwood organisation. Eric Clapton, the Bee Gees, so on, Cream, and they had Taste. So we ended up doing quite a few shows with Taste, opening up for them in the UK and also in Europe. And then both bands split up. I went back to Belfast. And during the time, I think Taste split up around October in 1970 in Belfast, and my band Deep Joy, we went back to Belfast, and we split up on New Year's Eve of 1970. But in the interim, what was quite strange was we were still playing the clubs in London. And a couple of times, Rory and his brother Donal would come down to the clubs just to see the band. And we thought they were giving us a bit of moral support and being like Irish lads and London and that. And it's only in later years I realised that he was actually checking out myself and Wilger as a rhythm section. But long story short, I went back to Belfast. I didn't know what to do because the trip to London, that 9-10 months in London was pretty horrendous in a lot of ways, especially the diet, which was a norm.
Yeah.
Starving musician, so to speak. And so I didn't know what, if I wanted to keep on going with music. And sort of middle towards the end of January, I got a phone call and I thought it was Wilger Campbell, the drummer, who had stayed in London because he brought his family over to London to set up home there. And it was Rory. And he said, Jerry, how are you doing? I got your number from Wilger. We sort of passed some pleasantries. And he said, you fancy coming over to London to have a jam at Blow, you know? I went, wow, great, sure. So he sent the ticket over. I got on a plane, went over to London, a little rehearsal room in Fulham Palace Road, West London. And we jammed for about 3 hours. It was fantastic. Went to the pub next door, had a pint, and I went back to the airport and went back to Belfast. And I didn't hear anything for about 2 weeks. I thought, oh, well, that's it. Another phone call. Jerry, do you fancy coming to making an album in London? Wow, yeah. Off I went. And I remember Ad Vision Studios. I mean, we had recorded with Deep Joy in Belfast. I mean, but very amateurish, you know. I mean, and to actually walk into Ad Vision Studios, and especially with an engineer like Eddie Offord, you're going, wow, this is like top notch, you know. And I remember it was around February, but it was a beautiful February week or 10 days. The sun shone every day, and it was cold. It was crisp. But and I was staying with Wilger up in Streatham because I didn't have any place to stay in London at the time. So we just get the train up to Baker Street and walk into Ad Vision Studios, be there at 10 o'clock in the morning. And we started working, started playing. We'd rehearsed for about 3 or 4 days prior to that, just because Rory would bring the new songs and the songs that he'd written, you know. And it was just a fantastic atmosphere because you could just tell in Rory's face and his whole nature and his whole persona, there was like a weight lifted off his shoulders because of the Taste thing, which was a bit of an acrimonious split, which was very sad, you know, because they were a fantastic band as well.
Yeah.
And Rory was obviously in his element, you know, and he was happy, you know, and he was enjoying every second of doing what he was doing because he was in charge of it. It was his thing, you know. It was just a fantastic time.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. I imagine a lot of this will be covered in your autobiography, Riding Shotgun. I haven't read it, but I've ordered a copy, so I'm eagerly looking forward to receiving it.
You're lucky to get one. I wish I had one.
Were you aware at that time that Rory was such a great talent, that he was going to be so influential and successful?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I was a fan of Taste, both Mark One and Mark Two. Mark Two with John and Richard McCracken, John Wilson, Richard McCracken. They were a fantastic band. And I mean, if you listen to the Taste album On the Boards, that still stands the test of time. And fantastic songs on there, you know. And I think if they had stayed together, they would have been a force to be reckoned with. But then again, if they had stayed together, then I wouldn't be here talking to you.
Oh, well, I'm glad it turned out as it did.
So am I.
And I think you were the only musician on every single one of Rory's studio albums. Is that right?
I was, yeah.
So you were his closest musical associate, really?
Yeah, a musical and friend. We were very close friends.
Right. What sort of person was he?
He was a lovely man.
Yeah.
In the proper sense of the word, he was a gentleman. You know, I mean, I never heard Rory swear, which is no big deal, but it's one of those things, you know, and he wasn't, you know, overtly religious, I mean, you know, but he was just a gentleman, yeah, until he walked on stage, and that was a different kettle of fish altogether. I mean, off stage, Rory could be quite introverted, you know, but on stage, he was like very, very extrovert.
Oh, wow. The band was one of the few to play in Belfast throughout the Troubles. What do you think this meant to the local fans?
That's one gig that sticks in my mind. The first time we went to Belfast during 1971, and the Troubles were pretty hot at the time, you know. And obviously, me coming from Belfast, I mean, I knew a bit more, you know, what was going on, you know. I admired Rory for taking that stand, you know, and saying, "Hey, come on. We're going to go and play to the people, you know, because the people of Belfast, they were starved of music and art in general. In Ireland, they were starved of music at that time because people wouldn't go because of the Belfast situation in the north of Ireland. But the night we played there, you know, both sides of the community came together. You know, it was fantastic. And just to look out onto that crowd, you know, and as I said, I was still a kid. I'm still 19. I haven't even turned 20 yet. And that was me playing with Rory in the Ulster Hall in Belfast, you know, and it's just the people, they were ecstatic. They loved every second, every note that the band put out there. And it was just a beautiful evening, fantastic. And And I have to take my hats off to everybody that took the challenge and went over there. I mean, that's the road crew and the band and Rory and management and everything, you know.
Oh, wonderful. What was your involvement in the 50th anniversary project then, Jerry?
This, basically.
Oh, you wouldn't normally be talking.
Talking about it. No, it's Rory's nephew, Daniel, has taken on most of the remastering, remixing, whatever they were doing, and obviously he dug out all the extra takes that we'd done. I mean, I've listened to all the takes, you know, and it brings back memories, you know, because I remember we would go in and we, you know, start the session without trying to record a song. We'd start just to get a sound together with a blues song or whatever. Like Otis Roycha takes time. We used to use and that's actually on the album, you know, with an outtake, you know.
Yeah.
But Daniel's taken care of that. And I think he's done a very good job.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, for what I've heard, I've only heard the two tracks that have been remixed, but they are sensational. I've read somewhere that you said that Rory brought his Irish roots into the blues, into the music. What did this add to the music? How did it change it?
Well, I think that's where the uniqueness comes with Rory's playing. He was a blues player. I mean, that was his love. But he was also steeped in traditional Irish music, you know, from his family side, you know. And if you listen to some solos, like I can't think of a solo offhand at the moment, but there's Irishness in there. He would play your blue notes, and then all of a sudden he would bring this Irish lilt in somewhere along the way. You know, it's I think there's a song called For the Last Time on that album. If you listen to the solo in that, there's Irishness in there.
Oh.
And I think that's what made him unique.
Yeah. You're living in France now. What led you to moving there then?
My wife.
Oh, right. Is she French?
She's French, yeah.
Oh, well. That's a very good reason.
Well, it's not just that. It was I've always loved France, you know. The very first gig I did with Rory was in Paris.
Oh, wow.
You know, which is on the box set as well, the film of that, you know. And I've always admired, you know, I've always loved coming to France, the food, the wine, say no more, you know, I mean,
of course,
it's just a country I've always loved. And the chance was, you know, when I met my wife, or prior to us being husband and wife, I moved over here to France, you know, because the situation was, I mean, she was in Paris, working in Paris, and to come to, she would come to London, I would come to Paris, back and forward. And I just took the chance and took the bull by the horn and came over and we bought a place and that was it.
Oh, wow. And what's the music scene like over there? Do you play there?
Oh, we play here with a band of friends. Yeah, I mean, we have done in the past with Rory and with Nine Below Zero. At the moment, the scene in France is not great, music scene. It's pretty wrapped up with, you know, house and dance and that sort of stuff, you know, so which is not really my cup of tea.
No.
But I mean, they have there's some good venues here. I mean, they have a couple of good festivals as well, you know, a couple of blues festivals, which are good, yeah.
Oh, wow. And I know you're still playing in the band of friends. Can you tell me a little bit about the band?
Yeah, I mean, the band came together when I moved to France. I was still playing with Nine Below Zero at the time. This would have been around 2006, 2007. And it was the first time I managed to get my old stereo out of storage and set it up at home and got all my vinyl out and started playing the vinyl again, which I haven't heard for years. Because sometimes when you're wrapped up in another project like Nine Below Zero, you're concentrating on that.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to other stuff. And in amongst a lot of the vinyl, it was all the Rory albums that I'd played on, you know, and I started playing them again. And I thought, God, these songs are fantastic. I'd forgotten how good the songs were.
Yeah.
And the performances, and I'd forgotten all that. I said, wouldn't it be fantastic to get some guys together and go out and put this on the road and bring it out to people, you know? I mean, and obviously I had to think of the right people to, I mean, there's many tribute bands out there. There's a lot of Rory tribute bands, and some of them are very, very good. But I wanted to do this not as a tribute, but as a celebration to Rory, because I played with Rory for 20 years.
Yeah.
And as luck would have it, Ted McKenna, who played drums with Rory for about 3 years, from 78 to 81, I believe, he was around at the time. He wasn't playing. He was lecturing at a college in Glasgow. So I rang up Ted, and Ted came on board, and then I found this young guy from Amsterdam, Marcel Schuppenzeel, who I'd played with, and we just put it together, the three of us, and went out on the road, and it sort of steamrolled, you know, from there. But sadly, we lost Ted 2 years ago. Yeah, which is very
that was
sad.
So sad.
There was so the lineup sort of changed. I mean, Marcel's went off. He's got his own band. Which is fine. So Brendan O'Neill is now on drums, who played with Rory for 10 years from 81 to 91. Guitar player Paul Rose from Newcastle. Paul actually won a Fender sponsored competition that Rory judged. Out of I think it's like 1,000 guitar players, Rory picked Paul as the number one.
Oh wow!
And guitar player vocalist Jim Kirkpatrick from a band called FM.
Oh yes, so I know them.
That's the lineup for the moment. We hope.
And I think you're playing. I think I saw you were playing in Kent.
We have a festival on the 22nd of August in a New Day Festival.
Yeah.
In Faversham in Kent. Yeah, we've done it before a couple of times. It's a great festival.
All right. Well, I hope to be able to get there.
Great.
And I know that you're a songwriter yourself. So are any of your songs in the set?
There's a couple in the set, that we wrote in the past. I mean, at the moment, we're actually working on a Band of Friends album of self-penned songs. It won't come out until next year. But also, in the meantime, we put a lot of recordings of Rory songs and a couple of our own songs up on digital outlets, you know, Spotify, so on and so on. So it's like in the form of two albums. It's called Spotlight on the G-Man, Volume 1, Volume 2.
Oh, it's to look forward to. Well, yeah. I mean, I'll be really happy to play any of your Band of Friends songs on the show if you let us have any tracks.
I'm sure that could be arranged.
Oh, wonderful. I'd love to hear them. Well, anyway, Jerry, thanks so much. I'm sorry we're running out of time now.
No problem.
It's really valuable to hear your experiences, and I'm sure the Jazz London Radio listeners will be enthralled by it all. Best of luck with the anniversary project and the Band of Friends, and I hope to be able to get down to Kent to see you play.
That'll be fantastic, Richard.
Take care. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Take care again. Bye-bye.
Well, we can't go without playing some music from the album, so let's hear At the Bottom and Just a Smile.
No, can we roll away?
Takes a fool to know how I feel. Feel like a fish running out a spinning reel. Bite on a hook and you'll know just what I mean. It's kind of sore at the bottom. It took you to come and make me see that life was not like it was meant to be. But I'll try hard enough to see just what it's like at the bottom. Takes a fall to land you on your knees. No one hears your call, cutting through the breeze. Kick that ball if it lands right at your feet. That's all you'll kick at the bottom. Jump in. It takes a fall to land you on your knees. No one hears your call, cutting through the breeze. Kick that ball if it lands right at your feet. that's all you'll kick at the bottom. Takes a fool to know how I feel. Feel like a fish running out of spinning reel. Bite on a hook and you'll know just what I mean. It's kinda sore at the bottom. It's kinda sore at the bottom. Kinda sore at the bottom. That's what it's like at the bottom. Just a smile that is spreading all over her face could warm up the room and set fire to the place. Yes, it could. You know it could. Now the fog is clinging all over the town. Put one foot in front, then you just might fall down. On the ground, she's in town. Like the rain that is falling all over the land, she cools down my mind when she touches my hand. Feels so good, yeah, so good. Well, just a smile that is spreading all over her face could warm up the room and set fire to the place. Yes, she could, you know it could.